Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Homeschool Educational Supplement that we all know as Interesting Stuff. And today we have something special for you. In fact, we've got something special for you in almost every episode. Well, I hope every episode, actually. Anyway, today we will be looking at Mars. Or more specifically, life on Mars, or how we get life to Mars as well, perhaps. And so that's the topic. Let's dive in. And can I tell you a little secret before we start? You know, I love the title Life on Mars because it's one of my favorite David Bowie songs. So if you haven't heard it, maybe you want to search for it and give it a little listen. Lovely lyrics. Anyway, on to the topic of the big red planet. In fact, if I look out of my window here, just to my right in the evening, Mars is one of the first stars that I can see in the sky. So perhaps if you look out your window, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, then maybe you'll be able to see it as well. And why is Mars important? Well, as it's one of our nearest neighbors, you know, it being the fourth rock from the sun, it's a planet that we've always thought that maybe we'll be able to get to, and a planet that maybe might be able to sustain some kind of life there as well. Now, although we haven't been able to set foot there yet, we have sent spacecraft there to collect data. So we know some information. So let's go over some of the science. First of all, the temperatures. The maximum temperature there is usually about 20 degrees C. The average temperature is minus 63 degrees C, which is pretty cold. And the minimum temperature that we know about was minus 153 degrees C. The highest point? Well, that's Olympus Mons, which is a ginormous volcano crater, which is over 21 kilometers high. That's about twice as high as Mount Everest on Earth. And the planet's size? Well, it has a diameter that measures all the way across at the equator of 6,792 kilometers, which means that Mars is just over half the width of Earth. So much smaller, but still important. Now, like the Earth, Mars has two icy poles, a north pole and a south pole. And naturally, as you can imagine, it gets warmer across the equator. Now, it takes Mars 687 of our Earth days to make one orbit around the sun. So a year on Mars is almost twice as long as a year on Earth. And Mars spins at roughly the same speed as Earth. So one day on Mars from sunrise to sunset is about 24 hours and 40 minutes long, only slightly longer than average day here. Now, like Earth, Mars has a moon, two moons, in fact. One is called Phobos, which is 27 kilometers long, and one is called Deimos, which is 15 kilometers long. And what's interesting is they're not really sphere-shaped. They're not round. They're much more shaped like some kind of odd potato that you might find in your grandparents' garden. And just in case you've ever wondered why we call it Mars, well, it's actually thanks to the Romans, who named it after their god of war. The colour of Mars, looking reddishy orange, reminded them of blood shed in battles. And because of this reddish colour, Mars is affectionately known as the Red Planet. But what makes it red? The answer is that the rocks on the surface of Mars contain a lot of iron. Long ago, there was liquid water on the surface as well. And when you add to that the atmosphere on Mars, which contains a small amount of oxygen, you get iron and water and oxygen, which produces a kind of rusty orangey-red colour. And so this chemical reaction produces something called iron oxide. And it's this rusty dust that gives the colour its red tint in the night sky. Now, as you know, every planet has some kind of gravity. It's that magical force that pulls you down towards the Earth and makes you fall when you trip. And it's good that we have it, because if we didn't, we'd just all be floating off into space. Anyway, the gravity on Mars is slightly different from the gravity on Earth. And this is because the more mass a planet has, the stronger its gravity is. Now, Mars is smaller than the Earth and contains less matter, so its gravity is weaker. That means, basically, you could jump higher on Mars than you could on Earth, which is kind of cool because you'll be able to stay in the air for longer and probably have a softer landing as well. Anyway, you've probably seen videos of how the astronauts moved when they landed on the moon. So it would be something like that, I guess. In fact, if you want to work out how much you would actually weigh on Mars, to calculate it, scientists have discovered that if you can measure your weight in kilograms and then divide it by the number 2.64, you will get your weight on Mars. This usually means that your weight on Mars is slightly less than half of what your weight would be on planet Earth. Now, Mars once had water, or at least that's what scientists think. They believe that billions of years ago, Mars was much warmer and much wetter than it is today. In fact, it probably had oceans and rivers, which left behind valleys that can still be seen. In fact, millions of years ago, it probably looked a little bit like Earth looks today. So where did all the water go? It's a good question. Well, over billions of years, Mars got cooler and its molten metal core hardened. Without a molten core, the magnetic field that protected the planet from solar wind disappeared, and Mars's atmosphere was gradually blown away. And so it's theorized that this lowered the pressure and temperature on the planet's surface. And then most of Mars's water evaporated, and the rest froze to ice. Now, because there's no water on Mars, it doesn't rain, although there are huge dust storms there, which is one of the crazy things that we would have to contend with if we ever actually managed to put people there. Now, is there life on Mars? Well, so far we haven't found any evidence yet. There are a few conspiracy theories that float around the internet that say we've discovered strange buildings, but I look at those pictures and, to be honest, they just look like giant rocks, so I think we have to keep on searching. So who knows? Maybe there's something under the surface, but we'll only know after the robots that we've sent there do a little bit more exploring. So we need to collect more data. And although humans haven't been to Mars, we've actually sent several spacecraft to explore it for us. And these spacecraft have sent back photos and are even able to do some experiments and send the results back. And so now, at the moment, there are over 20 robot vehicles on and around Mars. There are orbiters that circle around the planet but don't land. There are landers that touch down on the surface of Mars and send back information. And then there are rovers, which after landing can move around and explore. Now, the rovers that explore, one of the things they do is drill into Martian rocks and soil and collect core samples. These samples from different areas of the planet are then studied by scientists who analyze them to try to build a picture of the history of the planet. And so at this moment, the robots are a vital lifeline to information about our own solar system. And sending robots is slightly easier than sending people, because a journey from Earth to Mars takes about 7 months. And a trip there and back would take probably over 2 years. And you'd probably have to take a lot of stuff with you. In fact, you'd probably have to take everything with you. Because on Earth, the atmosphere presses down on us. But on Mars, there's very little atmosphere. And the air pressure there is low. So all of the time, astronauts would have to wear a pressurized spacesuit to venture outside and explore the Mars habitat. Also, to make things more difficult, it would be pretty hard to breathe there, and it's very cold. So the astronauts would have to stay inside a seated living room space that was able to produce its own air. and on top of that produce its own food as well. So it's theorized by some scientists that it would be possible maybe to set up a colony there, but it's going to take a long, long time to do that. Anyway, it's probably less risky to send robots rather than people, just in case there's some errors on the way. But even getting the robots there is pretty difficult. Just landing on the planet itself is a logistical nightmare. Let me try to explain. Basically, any ship entering the Mars atmosphere will be traveling at 20,000 kilometers an hour and will need to slow down really fast. Then, as the spacecraft slows down, air resistance in the atmosphere will cause the heat around the ship to rise up to about 1,300 degrees C. Then on top of that, at exactly the right time, as the ship enters the atmosphere, as it's 11 kilometers above the surface, it will have to deploy a huge parachute to slow down and soften its landing. Once the speed has slowed, the ship would have to start using its cameras and instruments to compare the surface below to try to pick the safest spot to land. Then, at about 2 kilometers above the surface, and probably still traveling at around 300 kilometers an hour, the actual ship will jettison its parachute and then activate 8 small rocket engines to try to slow down its final approach to the surface. And then, crazily enough, the rockets have to bring the ship to a hover at exactly 21 meters above the surface. And it's at this point that the bottom section of the ship opens up and the rover comes out and is lowered down on cables to the surface. Can you imagine? Can you think of anything more complicated? Then finally, as soon as the ship senses that the wheels of the rover robot are on the ground, the cables are released and the ship flies away to crash land at a safe distance. It flies all that way to crash land. Incredible. You'd think that they would come up with a way of making it land safely so they could use the parts or something. But I don't know. Maybe they have. Or maybe they will. Now, quite a few rovers have been sent to Mars over the years. The first two were sent by the Soviets in 1971, but they were lost soon after landing. The first actual successful rover was NASA's Sojourner, which landed in 1997. Then there was the Spirit and Opportunity rovers, which landed in 2004. Opportunity operated for 15 years and traveled 28 miles across the surface. And then the Curiosity rover touched down in 2011 and is still exploring and sending back scientific data to Earth. And then finally, there's the latest rover, Perseverance. And with the latest technology, the latest rovers are fantastic machines. For example, their body has a power system that operates the computers on board and keeps them warm and safe in the extreme Martian environments. The latest rover itself is powered by a radioisotope thermoelectric generator. Wow, that's a mouthful. Which is a very small nuclear power station, weighing just 45 kilograms and producing 110 watts of power, which is about enough to light 14 LED light bulbs. Which is not a lot, but at least it's something. Anyway, it works by converting heat released by the radioactive decay of plutonium dioxide into electricity, and it's designed to produce power for up to 14 years. Two rechargeable batteries are used to provide extra power when the rover needs more energy than the RTG can produce. And who knows what happens when the batteries run out. I guess you can't really go to the local shop and buy some more. Anyway, also attached to the rover is a special ground-penetrating radar system called RIMFAX, which can spot water or ice at up to 10 meters below the surface. Then there's the rover MOXIE system, which tests the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And on top of that, there's a total of 23 cameras, some of which are used for landing on Mars, some for driving around, and some for scientific instruments. And that's not all. There are two instruments called Pixel and Sherlock, and they use X-rays and ultraviolet lasers to examine the rocks and the dust of the Martian surface to help scientists understand more clearly about the chemicals there. And not only that, there's a drill as well that's mounted on a big arm of the rover, and that's used to collect samples, which are then stored in the belly of the rover before being dropped into a special site on the planet's surface. And of course, it's hoped that on future missions, ships will be able to collect these samples and bring them back to Earth for analysis. And there's more. There's a super advanced weather station on board the robot called the Mars Environmental Dynamics Analyzer, which measures the temperature and speed and pressure and humidity and dust levels of the environment around. And finally, tucked away underneath the latest robots is a solar-powered drone. And this little helicopter can perform flight tests to see if it's actually possible to fly on Mars. And so, as you can imagine, that's a lot of technology in one small machine. And I imagine it must be a pretty expensive machine as well. Now, one of the reasons that we know so much about Mars is that we've had great engineers and scientists working on data and information from the planet. And this is not a new thing. In fact, way back in 1571, there was born a scientist in Germany called Johannes Kepler. And what he noticed was that at certain times of the year, Mars seemed to move backwards across the sky and then correct itself and then move off in the right direction. This was commonly known as the Martian problem, and Johannes was determined to solve it. And through hard work, he did. It was while working on the Martian problem that Johannes came up with the three rules, which became known as Kepler's laws of planetary motion. These laws showed that planets orbit in ellipses, or oval shapes, not circles. That planets don't orbit at a regular speed, but slow down when they are further away from the Sun. And that the positions of the planets can be predicted using mathematical equations. Once Johannes had figured out his laws of planetary motion, he was finally able to solve the Martian problem. He worked out that Earth took 365 days to orbit the Sun, but Mars took 687 days. At times during Mars's orbit, when you looked at the planet from Earth, the angle between the two orbits was so extreme that it made it look as if Mars were moving backwards when it wasn't. It was just an optical illusion. The problem was solved, but it was never an easy journey for Johannes Kepler, because his family were not wealthy. However, his intelligence was noticed at a young age, and he was offered a scholarship to a local university. There, he came across the theories of the astronomer Nicholas Copernicus, and became fascinated with the idea that the planets rotated around the Sun, and decided to try to prove the theory. There was much opposition, however. The church felt that theories about the movement of the planets were controversial because they challenged religious beliefs. The Bible said it was the sun which orbited the earth, whereas Kepler's work argued that it was the other way around. So, to avoid getting in trouble with the church, Johannes fled to Prague and found work as an assistant to a fellow astronomer. Sadly, the astronomer died soon after, but luckily for Johannes, he left him his notebooks, which were filled with notes and observations on the movement of the planets. This information would prove key to Johannes's later discoveries. And not only that, but Johannes's work paved the way for Isaac Newton's theory of universal gravitation and laid the foundations of modern astronomy. And there's more on top of that, because although much of Johannes' career was taken up studying the motion of the planets, he also had numerous other interests and made other important discoveries. Kepler was the first person to design glasses which corrected both short-sightedness and long-sightedness. He was the first to explain how a telescope works. He was the first to describe how the tides of the sea are caused by the moon. And he was the first to come up with the word satellite to describe an object which orbited another object. And that is a little bit of history, and that concludes our study of life on Mars. Now, are you sad that there's no life on Mars? You know, maybe it's a good thing. Have you ever heard of that famous novel, The War of the Worlds? I think it was a film as well. You know, in that novel, it was written, who wrote that? Yeah, H.G. Wells wrote that, yeah. In that novel, it was theorized that there were aliens on Mars and that one day they might attack the Earth. So, now we know that, luckily, that was just science fiction. rather than science fact. But it's nice to use your imagination. It's nice to imagine all the different wonderful possibilities that are out there. So it's nice to explore, but don't forget to verify all of the data as well. That's it. I hope you enjoyed the topic. I enjoyed presenting it to you. And as always, there are extra comprehension questions under the video that allow you to check your understanding. Now, if you want a different topic, let me know and I'll look into it for you. Otherwise, you'll just get whatever is next on my list. And what that is, well, you'll just have to wait and see. So thanks for tuning in. Wherever you are, I wish you a great day, and I'll speak to you again soon. Take care.